Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you so much for joining us for what should be a very interesting dialogue about the murder of Michael Brown. Basically, there has been so much unrest in Ferguson, Missouri since August 9th when Michael Brown was killed by a Ferguson police officer. What we understand so far, and there's many accounts, but a lot of the witness accounts, in my opinion, are basically saying the same thing, and that's that Mike Brown and his friend were walking down the street, and at some point, they were approached by an officer who asked them to get out of the street. For whatever reason, they chose not to get out of the street because they felt that they were very close to their destination. It appears that agitated the officer, and the officer put his car in reverse, and what we understand, he almost hit them when he backed up. At some point, he asked Mike to come to the car, or Mike was closest to the car, and there was some exchange of words, and allegedly he reached out of his window and put Michael into some type of chokehold, at which time they said Michael began to struggle. And at some point, the gun was shot, and Michael took a hit, and we understand that he and his friend noticed that he had been shot, and they both began to run. At that point, Michael ran approximately 35 feet from the vehicle. They said the officer was following him on foot, and when Michael stopped, the officer shot him again as he was turning around to surrender. Mike then allegedly dropped to his knees, raised both hands in the surrender position, and said that, "Please don't shoot, please don't shoot." And we understand that the officer walked closer to Michael and at that point shot him execution style. And at that point, the friend went to get help. But there were many people allegedly outside that day that had cell phone videos of what happened, eyewitness accounts of what happened are all over YouTube at this time. So tonight, that's what we're talking about, the murder of Mike Brown. We're not going to call it a shooting, y'all, because if it happened like the eyewitness accounts are saying it happened, that was a murder, execution style. So we know that since that time, Ferguson has not been the same. There's been unrest in that town since that shooting. There's been rioting. We know there's been peaceful rallies and peaceful protests. However, the police, the Ferguson County Police Department, has come out at night and basically shot into the crowd tear gas and rubber bullets and basically brought attack dogs on the people. So these are some of the things that have been occurring, and it has basically gotten the attention of the world. And we know that the governor is allegedly en route. We know that the president has made a statement about it. Our president has acknowledged that excessive force was used and has said that the Justice Department and the FBI will be joining the investigation. We also understand that the governor has pulled the Ferguson County Police Department from their duties of basically policing Ferguson. So that's a good thing. So those are some of the developments that has happened since Mike Brown's death on August 9th. So that's what we're talking about tonight, y'all. The topic is Michael Brown's murder, catalyst for unrest in Ferguson, Missouri. We're going to bring up my two co-hosts this evening. I'm going to try to find them on the line. Mr. Christopher Funds and Mr. A.J. Houston, good evening.
Good evening, everyone.
I'm trying to open. A.J., are you there? Okay. I thought I was trying to find A.J. For some reason, I'm not able to find A.J. on the phone. I see. I'm sorry. Good evening, A.J. How you doing?
Nasa, how you doing? You doing all right? Can you hear me?
I'm good, yeah. There's a lot of phone lines already buzzing tonight. Everybody's want to talk about what happened. You know, before we chime in to everybody else, what do y'all think about the developments that have occurred since Mike Brown's murder?
Well, my take is that there's nothing new under the sun, and it's a shame that we have to keep saying that.
Hello.
And it's a shame that we don't remember not too long ago when there was always water hoses and police dogs and, you know, plastic bullets and nightsticks.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. So, but you know what? You got to remember, though, there's a generation that has never seen this. You know, those of us that were products of the 60s, you know, we understand and we saw a little of that. You know what I'm saying? But there's this younger generation that's never seen that. You know, I know, I'll be honest with you, I've never seen it. I've never seen where they brought German Shepherds to the scene, and they had military gear on, and they were all armed up like that. Have you seen that, I mean, Christopher, in your lifetime?
No, I haven't. And to the degree that the riots were going on, it brought back memories of what I've seen in the 60s in terms of the civil rights and with the police and the police dogs and so forth. And it's just very unfortunate that the situation had to become so volatile. And I often say is that until that thing called justice is equally meted, we're going to have problems. And then that means for the individuals that enforce the laws as well, because they should be held to the same, if not the higher standard. And in this case, it seems to be, like AJ said, nothing new under the sun. Whether it's the everyday average Joe or Susie that does wrong versus a police officer, politician, or whoever, the same standard, and they should be held accountable when they are caught up in misconduct as well. And until they're willing to do that, people are getting tired of these things happening, and they're going to catalyze themselves into riots and to unrest, and a lot of people are not going to take the civil route, and they're going to take matters into their own hands, unfortunately.
I agree. We're going to go to the phone line. Wanda Bull, good evening. You're on for the day.
Good evening, Terry Hines. Good evening, panel. First, I'd really like to send my condolences to the Brown family. And then I would like to add that, you know, there's something wrong when an unarmed man is shot by police. We've seen this too many times in this country. Some of the most questionable murders of our people, time and time again, go unpunished. And it doesn't matter, you know, if you have a background, if you did something, if you stole something.
Amen.
It doesn't justify being gunned down in the streets like a dog. The Bible says, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. There can never be any justification for many of the murders that have occurred. And then, you know, I'm starting to feel like, ladies and gentlemen, that there's a bigger problem than just the police.
It is.
If we're paying attention to the news, civilians are armed. White civilians are armed. And now, you know, it's almost as if anybody can claim fear when it comes to black people, and you can shoot them and go to jail, and more times than not, you're going to get off. Just because you said, I was afraid, or I was in fear, because there was a black person in the area. This country has learned that you can just make these type of accusations and take a black person's life, and it has no value in this country. There has to come a time when African Americans unite and make this country understand that by any means necessary, this is no longer going to be tolerated. And, well, that's pretty much what I have to say.
Whoa. Thank you, Wanda Bull, for chiming in tonight. We're going to go to Global Political Awakening. Their blog host is with us. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. This is Mark Daniels. I'm the founder of Global Political Awakening and also of the Arkansas Police Accountability Project. And I just wanted to say that, first of all, I want to, you know, thank you for having this, you know, providing this opportunity for people to discuss this, because I think this is a healthy way to deal with the situation. Police brutality, of course, crosses all racial lines and all class lines, and it is a major problem in America. And I've been following what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri, since the beginning, and have been deeply concerned for the people of Ferguson. I think that the larger issue, which I think many people fail to recognize because the mainstream media and the politicians want to keep us divided along racial lines and class lines, the larger issue is that there is an agenda that wants to divide people in order to accomplish particular goals or specific goals. And the militarization of the police departments is part of that agenda, and it's a globalist agenda. They know that what's coming is an economic collapse in this country, and they know that there's going to be civil unrest. And so that's the reason why the federal government is, made it so that police departments can take advantage of what they are calling, a surplus military equipment. Well, they're not giving them that just because it's surplus. They're giving them that because they know what's going to happen. And what people need to really wake up to, regardless of your race, is we need to come together. We need to unite, and we need to fight against the militarization of our police departments. And that has to be done on a local level, on a state level, and on the federal level. And so I'm very interested in what you guys have to say. I've enjoyed what I've heard so far. But I want us to try to focus on the fact that this is not about race, although there's a racial component. There's no doubt that African Americans and other minorities have been discriminated against in this country, and that police brutality is handed out much more toward them than it is to the white population, for example. But I believe that white people need to wake up and realize it ain't going to be long before they're the victims. They already are.
And I think I'm always surprised when I see on after a situation like this, and I'll see the comments on these Facebook pages about justice for this or justice for that, and you'll see everything is broken down along race lines. And I'm thinking, do they not get that we're all in the 99% that's being targeted? Do they not realize that it's just a matter of time that the pecking order comes down to them? It's almost as though there are some people that are just totally in ignorance about that.
Well, it's much more about class than it is race, although you can't deny the racial component, and I don't want to do that. I think that blacks have been – all you have to do is look at the prison population and tell you right there, when blacks are a minority of the population but they're the majority of the prison population, there's definitely a racial component. But I think class is much more a part of it. There's the global elites that want to set up a global government, and I think that's part of it.
And might I interject there? Can I interject something right there, Carrie? And I'm in complete agreement that it's class, but I think it's – since we are the lower class at present – there's been this movement of removing the rights of women and minorities throughout America ever since the Tea Party came up, and you hear the Republican agenda, and I hate to make it about that, but when you hear them say blatant things about these rights are no longer ours, or we need to take these rights, or women don't have the rights to do this. See, we just look at it as fighting for rights. We don't look at it as that they're minimizing our ability in this country to participate in this electoral process. And not only that, you have so many black boys in prison that in most states, I think it's only 4 states in the United States that you can actually get your rights back to vote after you've been in prison, if you're on papers or whatever it is. So you have all these voting age people unable to vote because of a misdemeanor or because of some record they have on a criminal record. So that's why you see these people being arrested 30 times, but they're not in jail and don't have any, hadn't stayed in the penitentiary, but they're arrested 30 times. So to me, this is the same thing as we're just targeting different people and making it seem like these people are blatant acts of misjustice. But you can't be arrested 30 times and not go to jail for a long period of time. That's either harassment or that's just a blatant attack on this man's civil liberties.
Well, and two, I was just going to add to that. I think with the caller, with what AJ is saying, the other component that we have to keep in mind is a capitalist component, because the majority of federal prisons and institutions are now privatized. And those privatized contracts have a clause that basically states that these facilities have to be at an 80 to 90% or higher capacity at any given time. So that is also a mechanism that is driving, and I believe everything else that's been said is also true in a component. But there is a lot of money on the table. So if you think about the militarization component, that's actually going to assist, because what they're going to do now is they're going to break a lot of the laws. They're going to shake the bushes. And if you, even if you didn't do anything wrong, they're going to arrest you, because they're also trying to continue the populace in prison.
Okay. We're going to go to Donald Lee and Gwen Samuel. Gwen Samuel. Donald Lee.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Can you hear
me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, great. I was telling my son to be on standby. He was a little nervous, so I just told him to stay on standby, because the more I'm hearing this and the more we're talking about, you know, the prison pipeline and the need, the extreme that they are going to fill it up. And it feels like they're saying, okay, we're not moving the school to prison pipeline fast enough. We're not filling the jail, so let's just kill them. Just kill him, you know? And, you know, I'm talking to my son. He's looking. He's running when he see me, right? He's running because he knows the drill. We got to talk again, you know? And yet I'm trying to trust that he's going to make good decisions. I'm trying to believe that he's going to respect authority. But, you know, going from get off the sidewalk to massacre, execution, them some big extremes.
Well, Gwen, tell us, you know, and we asked Gwen's son to be a part of the panel tonight, well, not to be a part of the panel, but to tell us his story. This young man's story is so much like Michael Brown, it is scary. The only difference between Gwen's son and Michael Brown is that Gwen's son got arrested and Michael Brown got executed. The only difference, the stories are so the same, it's scary. And when your son is so articulate, can he tell his own story? Because the young man, he's very intelligent. And when I saw his YouTube video telling his story, I was blown away that he could have been Michael Brown.
Believe me, he could have been from the time frame, the daytime, the sunlight, the like they say, your structure, you know, his body type. You know, almost. So while you're talking, I'm just going to dial him in because he's on standby.
Okay. And so, you know, her son is up in Connecticut. And we know that Mike Brown's murder took place in Ferguson, Missouri, right outside of St. Louis. But the young man had basically an encounter with the police just like Mike Brown had. And just the similarities in the two stories, and they just make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, and it just shows you the grace of God. That's just really just no other way to put it. The grace of God is the only difference between the two stories. Is he there, Gwen? Is he with us? Okay. We're going to go to Donald Lee while Gwen gets her son on the phone. Say what, Gwen?
Okay. We're back, just so you know.
Okay. We're ready.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Elijah?
Yes.
Okay. Oops. So my son is on the line, Carrie.
Okay. Okay. Hold on just a second, Donald. Okay, Elijah, tell us what happened with you. You're up in what part of Connecticut? Well, we don't want to. What part?
Maryland.
Just say Connecticut. Oh, I just told you, don't say
okay,
your city. These people going crazy.
Okay, he's in Connecticut. What happened to you, Elijah?
We just left school. We just got out of school, and the sidewalks are pretty much packed and filled. And since it was snowing outside, they're even narrower. And so I took it upon myself to walk next to the curb so I can get around the people on the sidewalk. And while I'm in the side of the curb, my friend whispers to me, "Yo, look at that cop!" And I look back and I see the cop come speeding really fast towards me, so I kind of jog to the next driveway, and I get into the driveway, and I'm pretty much going onto the sidewalk, and all I hear is, "Hey, do you speak English?" And I look back, and I pointed to myself, saying, "Like, me?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "Come here." And since there's someone who's behind me, I had to scoot to the side to get around everybody, and while I'm doing that, he says, "Come here," and I tell him I'm coming. And by the time I get to his car, he tells me, I swear to God, if I have to get out this car, and I'm confused, very surprised, I'm at his car, so why would he say that? And by the time he gets out the car, asks me where I go and this, and then he takes off my book bag, and then he tells me to put my hands on the trunk and spread my feet, and he pats me down, and then he puts me in the back of the police car, and I said, I do not consent to searches when he put me in the back, and then he just shuts the door. So then they go through my book bag, and they found a lead case for your mechanical pencils, and I told them, I said, that is a lead case, and then they said, this looks like this is used for drugs, and I was really confused, and they searched my whole book bag, and then they write some stuff down, my age, and then they drove me off to the police station, and that was basically what happened.
Did they ever tell you why you were being arrested?
Well, I asked when I was in the police cruiser. I asked, so I'm being arrested for walking on the street, and the officer said basically yes. That was the rest of the ride. I just left it on that note.
And so then they called me, and so they say I need you to come down to the police station. So we always thinking you kids acting foolish. I'm like, why? And they said, well, we arrested your son for walking off the sidewalk. So you have to ask that again, because I'm thinking it had to be he was walking in the middle of the street losing his mind or something, or almost caused an accident, right? Because that's not what you think the man is saying. So then now I'm about to leave him there, because not because of the incident, but I'm like, no, you're not doing this to me now. I'm about to go to work, and I don't understand. So I get down there, and I'm listening to the cop. He said, yeah, I remember your son. And so then I read the Michael story. This was about 2-3 months ago. So this was 7 months ago. So now I'm reading the story on the internet, and now I'm done, right? Because that was about 2:15 they called me. Michael was shot about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He kind of looking like him. You talking about there's going to be a problem if he don't come there. I need to know what kind of problem you talking about now. And what did my son that do? What made you point him out? Is he's in high school? There were kids on the sidewalk. There's some black, not a lot, so I'm sure his color played a part because it's majority white town. So I'm sure but what made my son stand out to you so that you became fixated on him? That's what scared me. Whatever happened in Ferguson, he became fixated enough that he couldn't stop executing that man, knowing the world is watching him. That you can't sleep easy on. That you can't sleep easy on. And so now my son, he's scared to see me every time I'm coming, and there the story goes on. He thinks I'm not going to let it go. I wish I could tie him around my waist. I wish I could be a helicopter mom. But, what am I to do? What is the – really, though? I mean, seriously.
How old is he?
Elijah?
Yeah. He's 15.
And you're 6 feet what?
Can you repeat that? I didn't hear correctly.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'7". I really don't know the exact height.
Okay, he's 5'7", and you're very husky on this thing. You have a husky build?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You look like he could be on the blind side.
The similarities in the fact that, police officers have gone from chasing the bad guys to chasing kids who are walking down the street. Something's wrong. All the crime is going on in our communities, and they got time to chase the kids off the sidewalks and execute them, and they shoot them execution style because they're not walking on the sidewalk. This is crazy. Let's go to Donald Lee. Good evening, Donald Lee. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on. One of the things that concerned me, and I think I shared it with somebody earlier, was this whole thing where they're playing that video back, back and forth on the robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what I don't like about it is it's like they're trying to desensitize the public to the fact that what really went down, how the police officer, gunned this child down. And so basically the videos that you keep seeing on the robbery thing, it's like, well, first of all, that right there is so disconnected from what actually happened as far as the killing goes, okay? So what it is you keep playing it over and over and over again, people then begin to get more desensitized to the reality of this man killed this boy. So now it's like if you ingrain this, they're ingraining in people's minds that somehow this boy deserved it. Look what he did over there. You see what I'm saying? I think personally, I think that some judge or somebody need to ban that video from being played like that. Anybody have any comments on that?
No, I agree with you. I think the release of the video the same day that they released the name of the officer is very suspect. I think that was definitely a diversion technique to take you away from the focus of the officer.
Right.
And now I want you to look at the fact that this guy's a bad guy, and you guys are defending him, and you've been defending him for the last 6 days, but he's really the bad guy. So I think that's definitely where they're going with that.
I think somebody in the media need to speak up and say that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, particularly one of our African American journalists who has a platform. You see what I'm saying? You know, I don't think that should go uncontested.
Good luck with that. Area code 817703. Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Carrie. Karen, can you hear me?
I can.
This is Angela, Jermaine Darden's sister.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm sitting here making notes, and I'm going, oh, my God, you know what? This thing right here, it's not something that just started. This has been going on for years, and it's been going on under the radar. And the same thing with Jermaine. When the cops ran up in his house, he was on the couch on his knees, and when they hit that door, his hands went up in the air in the prone position. But my brother is dead today because of that. And his
brother was killed by Fort Worth police. They stun gunned him, correct?
I think I talked to you about a few months back. His sons were at home. They had a council session with their grief counselor, had been at home all day. 2 minutes after leaving the house, the police pulled them over, told them that they were under arrest, and the boys were told not to, you know, give them any information until a person of, you know, that could represent them was there. And when they found out who they were, and whose sons they were, you know, they asked the grandmother, well, what's their names? And she said, told them what their names was, and they said, oh, Darden, Jermaine Darden. Oh, well, they're under arrest. They tried to charge these boys with burglary of a habitation and organized crime. We're talking about a 17 and a 14-year-old kid, okay? And those charges were dropped, you know. But it's the fact that, like the guy said, there's an agenda. And this agenda is to purge as many of us in the lower class. And I'm not just talking about, the majority of it is blacks right now. But just like he said, they're going to start targeting the lower class minorities of other races. It's getting to the point where I'm constantly saying, we need to speak out. Our government isn't doing our job. Yes, the president said that they would investigate. Okay, are you just going to investigate that one city? Or are you going to investigate the country, every state police station around the country? Because it's happening everywhere. Not just here, but it's happening everywhere. When you got your governor that's being indicted for trying to push somebody out of their job, and then you got the mayor telling young women on Twitter that they need to be bossy in order to become a leader. I mean, what are these people trying to do? I mean, it's like they're instigating younger generations into crime or into the harm's way. Go ahead.
Now, I have to say, in the history of America, they didn't attack black men until they began to destroy their names first.
Exactly.
You have to assassinate somebody by their name first, by what they do or the way they look or their hairstyle or the clothes they wear. but they perpetuated the clothes that everybody's wearing. You know, I tell my sons and nephews, I say, look, if you're in Israel or Palestine or wherever, and you like the clothes they wear, but you're not a soldier, but you start wearing those clothes, you are now a soldier.
Okay, but see, that goes back again. Our government is so interested in protecting others in other countries, but they're not protecting us here in the U.S. And that's a problem.
That goes to our voting process. I'm saying we stop voting. We don't look at any candidates. We don't have anything going on in our communities that will make the candidates come see us because they know we're voting in force. And I think we have the ability to change the Tea Party and whatever everybody else is saying. They see that we have this force to change some things. And I think it starts grassroots on everybody saying, look, we're not accepting our community. You got to vote on community leaders, these city councilmen, school board members. I'm saying that's where it changes, where you actually begin teaching your children something and not letting other people come in and say, this is the choice we're giving.
And see, and that's my thing. It's to the point where the neighborhoods need to go back to the way it was when you knew everybody on your block. You didn't need the cops to come and protect you because your neighbors protected your property. They protected your kids. And that's not happening anymore. And then when something like this happens, no one wants to speak out on the injustice, so it's getting covered up and swept under the table. And it's sad that this child had to lose his life before people start waking up in this country and saying, whoa, wait a minute. My brother lost his life, but it was like nobody even acknowledged that. And then you have this Dante Parker in San Bernardino. His family are grieving right now because he was tased to death. And then you had that young man that was up in Seattle that the mall cops, they maced him and then arrested him when everybody around them is telling him he's not the one. You got the wrong person.
Angela, hold that thought. We got to take some more calls. If you just tuned in, we're talking about the topic of Michael Brown's murder. That's the catalyst for the unrest in Ferguson. That's what we're talking about tonight. Michael Brown's murder, the catalyst for unrest in Ferguson, Missouri. Let's go to 214-399. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Just wanted to chime in a few points. The lady you actually just had calling, she made a very good point when she said they're purging.
Mm-hmm.
You see, at one point in time, they were doing things on a discreet level. Now they're blatantly killing black lives, black kids, black women, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get to that point, us as a people, as a community, as a black nation, whether we like it or not, we're going to have to be willing to fight back. You can't go.
Mm-hmm.
You can't vibe with a system that's purposely going against you.
Mm. Mm.
I don't care if you want to fight back by getting more educational. I don't care if you're fighting back by getting your economic gains together to the point where we're spending dollars amongst ourselves. Because I don't know if anyone noticed, black people alone spend 85% of the money spent in America spent by us. So if our dollars went away from them, that could make a big, that can make a big dive into the ocean. But more or less, we got to be willing to fight back. We can't just sit back and get on our knees and pray and think magically something's going to happen. These people are showing you that they don't care.
You know what? And I agree. When you say educate yourself, I think most black people don't know what's in the Constitution, unfortunately. And if I'm wrong, y'all call in and tell me I'm wrong. But I think we all need to know what's in that Constitution now because we need to be able to, when we're stopped, tell the officer what our constitutional rights are. I think we need to get familiar with some of these cases where officers have been put in a position where they have been proven to be wrong with some of the things that they did. We need to be able, I saw a video on YouTube where the officer stopped the young man and asked him for his identification, and the young man said to the officer, am I being detained? You know, am
uh-huh.
I under arrest?
Uh-huh.
We need to know that we have a right to be detained. A police officer. We need to know this stuff.
And I agree with
Jerry.
You. The only thing about that even if I knew my rights and you killed me dead on the spot, how can I go to court to say this officer wronged me? See, once he kills me, they're going to take his word because he is an officer of the law.
Exactly.
So that's the only thing I'm afraid of is once you...
I'm going to go here with you. I disagree. Ferguson changed the game. and we need to recognize Ferguson, Missouri, of all places on the planet, changed the game. Ferguson, Missouri put the spotlight on the fact we got a problem with police brutality. It exists everywhere.
Right.
There's videotapes all over YouTube, all over the web. There's a problem with police brutality. What we got to do, in my opinion, is keep the momentum up. We cannot let the guard down now. I mean, seriously, the floodgates are open. We got to start realizing what we got to do. That's what the purpose of this show is tonight, for us to educate ourselves, exchange ideas and strategies on how we can combat this. Because police brutality on any level is just wrong. Whether the person ends up dead or they're beaten like Rodney King is just wrong.
We also have to be careful. Because at times, you know, psychology 101, at times the victims sometimes blame themselves for it. Because we can sit back and talk about how, well, maybe he shouldn't have been sagging his pants, or maybe he shouldn't have been looking a certain way. When does that ever justify you taking someone's life? And we can go, and I hear the cliche line of, well, what about the black-on-black crimes? Anytime the law knows that you committed a black-on-black crime, that is not going unpunished. You're going to jail. 9 out of 10 times, you're going to jail. The outcry is the fact that these guys are getting away with it. That's the issue.
Okay, I just want to make a suggestion. All these small cities, all these cities have the police annex stations. So what if everybody decided to what police are working at this annex station, what's the badge numbers, let's see their records, and what type of things they're doing. Now you're actually monitoring. Not really monitoring the police, but you know who's in your area and you know their record and you know what they've done before, because they give a police a desk job, move him somewhere else. And he has a criminal record.
I can hear that, but if we move this cop somewhere else, who's to say he won't do it to another kid?
We have to show them
that you can't do that. Let me tell you something about history, my man, and you're making a very good point, but I want to hit you with a little history, the history of the world. In order for you to be willing to have liberty, in order for you to be willing to have peace, you have to be ready to engage yourself in war.
But
it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like just going abide with the person that's oppressing you.
The starting point is knowing. Anything's starting point is knowing. And that's what we're talking about on the show, about knowing. So I'm not saying that there won't be any action or any recourse or anything. I'm saying now you have a record and you know. When you know, you can change things.
Do you know the guy who choked out Eric Garner that got killed? That cop in New York. I don't know if you know about it. Staten Island, New York. That cop was sued twice. The police department of that city was sued twice. They had to pay out money twice, and they still let this police officer be on the force. You got to understand that you're going to the police department to complain about the police department. That doesn't sound a little funny to you?
Sure, but it's valid points on all sides, but AJ, what he's on to is that you have to realize in most urban cities, the police records of misconduct are not matters of public record. So a lot of times they don't know, and right, there may be an officer that they move from one place to another because he was doing a lot of stuff and had a lot of formal complaints against them. But in Chicago, they are fighting right now in federal court not to have to give people, as a matter of public record or a matter of requesting, police background for misconduct. That's
exactly.
Thank you. And also, moreover, let's speak on Chicago. Chicago is the most dangerous city to be in the United States right now. Now, understand is when you have parents that live in an inner city, black, white, blue, or green, it doesn't matter. If those parents are worried about the criminals on the street, but you're afraid to talk to the police because this is what the police are doing, where do we go from that point? And that's the big issue. The police department, when you take a job as an officer, no matter how you personally feel when you inside your house, when you walk out that house and put on your suit and put on your badge, you need to have it in your mind that I'm here to protect everyone, whether I like them or not. And if you're not willing to do that, then something needs to be done. To me, and I don't mean to tell anyone to do anything violent.
Okay.
I'm going to need everybody to pay attention to when someone else is talking so we can actually get everybody involved in the conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I gotta listen on because we gotta take some more calls. We're gonna go to area code 203-443. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Oh, that's me, Karen. I just disconnected my phone. It's Gwen Samuel.
Okay. Great. Okay. Bianchi, good evening. You're on center stage.
Hey, Gary, what's going on?
Oh, nothing.
Oh, that's good. I hear y'all have a nice conversation.
Well, what do you think?
I'm thinking about what?
About Mike Brown's murder.
Well, you know, we not too far from there. But he was murdered. Mike Brown was not afforded his 14th Amendment right of due process, but the officer, you know, when I heard that Mike Brown and the other came from somewhere, of course they showed this tape of him stealing some cigarillos out of a convenience store, but that has nothing to do with the case because the officer was not even in pursuit. I did not even know anything about it. But, you know, they was crossing the street. Officer comes out in his car and hollers out at him to get the F out of the street. Apparently they took their time. He stops car, bags up, almost hitting one of them. Then that's when things began. They held him there about the man that has hands up and so forth. It is that truth.
We already know.
One of the things, Carrie, that's really, it's really awesome is that the governor, Drew Politics, put the responsibility and took everything out of the hand of the chief of police and put it in the hand of Missouri State Highway Patrol captain, who happened to be African-American, who actually grew up in that area. And, of course, the people didn't like that at all on the other side. And what was awesome is that the people that were protesting came out on the streets, and they would walk up and hug this guy, Mr. Johnson, I think his name was, hug him and shake his hand and so on, one after the other, one after the other. He's walking around without a bulletproof vest on, and the Justice Department needed to come in because the county prosecutor, McCullough, never would convict that officer for what he's eventually did do.
Okay.
So we have to sit
okay.
back and see what happens.
So you're saying there's no way he's gonna be found guilty of murdering Mike Brown if he's just going through the grand jury process, and then you're saying they won't find him. You're saying he won't even be found guilty.
We have very little confidence in McCullough. He's been there for a long time, haven't done anything. He's been very biased. You needed the Justice Department to come in and disclose whether or not Mr. Brown's civil rights were violated. If that's the case, then you got a whole different scenario. That city has been known for these type of activities. Right next door is Dellwood. With the incident with Eleanor Reasonover, who, because the police chief withheld evidence, put it in his draw. She was one vote on the jury from being put to death, and ended up spending 16 years in prison for something she didn't do.
So you guys are here in St. Louis, right?
Yes, I'm in St. Louis County.
Okay, so he's right there in the middle of it. What has been the mood of your area since Mike Brown's murder?
Well, you have a bastion of young people coming from all over. Mike Brown apparently lived in like an apartment complex that been turned into low income housing, and the people that's marching, of course, as you've seen on the news, it's coming from all over the area.
Okay.
Of course, we don't condone any violence or loot, but, you know, things like that do occur when the opportunity presents itself.
Uh-huh. And we got to admit, y'all, a lot of opportunities have showed up in Ferguson, because you know what? Center Stage, Carrie Hines, nobody associated with us agree with any of the losing. I mean, seriously, we think that's just negativity being brought to the situation, and it's not going to help anything. So we don't want it to be known or said that we condone in the people that's rioting, and you know, that's not rioting, but the ones that are looting. We agree that people should be able to riot if they choose peacefully, and people should be able to protest. People should be able to have rallies if they choose to peacefully. That's not a problem. But whenever you go to a weed store in the middle of a situation like this and you steal some hair, that is not cool. I'm sorry. And I think, you know, those people, if they're caught, they should be prosecuted, because that has nothing whatsoever to do with Mike Brown. It doesn't have anything to do with justice. I think that's just plum silliness and some people taking advantage of a bad situation. And you just tuned in. We're talking about Mike Brown. Mike Brown's murder is the catalyst for the unrest in Ferguson. That's what we're talking about. Mike Brown's murder being the catalyst for the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone line.
Somebody's got some static. I think that was the Yankee background. Okay, we're going to pick up 214-802. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hi. Basically, I want to preface my statement by saying, of course, I, you know, believe the situation is very tragic, especially having a African-American male son myself. Whenever I hear of these type of stories, you know, it brings fear to me, because I realize that I have to teach my son how to respond to authority, not only authority that is positive, but authority that may be, you know, negative, and authority figure that may possibly bring harm. And as I'm sitting here listening on the call, you know, of course I hear the outrage of what happened to this particular person. He was gunned down. He was unarmed. And I guess, from listening to everything, it seems like maybe he was doing nothing and he just was just out the blue, just shot. Okay, but I just want to challenge everyone on the line to really go to the root of what can we really do to help protect our boys. Because when I think about the perspective of an educator at a school working with primarily minority students, the disrespect is pervasive.
Uh-huh.
You cannot ignore the fact that a lot of these children are not being taught how to respect authority. They are very disrespectful. They're very combative. They're very belligerent. It's horrible how they act. Now, I'm not going to try to justify the actions of the police officer, because I mean, truly, none of us really know the story. We don't know what happened. But in my imagination, I can think of some situations that happen in a schoolhouse that could cause a teacher to possibly snap at these children who compulsively continue to misbehave and actually come at adults as if they are adults too. There's no respect at all. So
let me stop you and ask you, I think I hear you, and I'm going to see if I can mirror what I thought you just said. Now, first of all, I don't think everybody has the ability to work with children. So if that's the case, you remove yourself from a job in which you have to come into direct contact with people's kids. With that said, let's fast forward to the situation with Mike Brown. When you get through at the end of the day, did he do anything to cause his murder? Because if he has his hands in the air and he's on his knees and he's saying, please don't shoot, how does that make it okay that he was shot and killed?
Exactly.
Well, my first statement that I made was I said I was not condoning. But let's rewind to the first interaction that they had. Okay, so if the police officer, no matter if he was speaking to him in profanity, bad language, whatever. Because you can always respond in a manner right now that's going to keep you safe and then later on go back and address the situation. If the police officer is passing by and say, get, you know, nigga, get off the street, bleep, 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 whatever he's saying, this is what I want to know. Why not simply get out the street and get on the sidewalk?
Okay,
why not do that?
I need to
my address there, please.
Hello?
Oh, let me address that.
Hello?
I said, yes, may I address that?
Hello?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Somebody jump in.
Okay, but my
point
is...
I was trying to jump in.
And
I keep getting interrupted.
Okay, well, you have the floor.
Thank
okay,
you. I appreciate it. Just two quick things. Number one, the idea that, you know, that you should always be the one to bow down. When officers speak to white people, they don't speak to them in demeaning terms.
Exactly.
So I don't know why it is that our children should have to be taught that they should be spoken to in a disrespectful manner and they should just suck it up. Now, I agree with what the lady said about, listen, you can always live to fight another day, but that too becomes tiresome. Secondly, the other thing is what I would really like to see is all of these people that are so busy filming with their cameras to just put the cameras down and get involved. I watched a video of a woman being beaten by a police officer on the side
yes.
of the highway while
yes.
people just drove by. Nobody stopped to get out their car and help her. The same
mm-hmm.
thing with the guy in New York. People are standing there with their cameras filming this man being murdered. When somebody, one simple person, could have intervened and they might be here today. So this is a community effort. When you see something and it does not feel right, it's time to stand up and step in.
Yeah.
It's a simple thing, people. We're dissecting it. We're talking about the kids or this and we need to do that. No, this is common sense. If you see something, if the cops are doing something and it's not right, step in. Get involved with it. They can't kill a whole community.
And I think, and you know what, let me jump in right there. I 100% agree. You know what I think? I think this. I think we gotta be careful letting one or two people have a target on their back. Now, listen, do I know I got a target on my back for doing that Twitter blast today at 12 o'clock and doing this show today? I do. I do. But you know what? One thing Dick Gretchen told me, a soldier can't be scared. And I think if all of us became soldiers, one soldier wouldn't have a target on their back. That's just me.
So what's the analogy of the soldiers? Are you saying that the young man who was gunned down, are you comparing him to a soldier? I'm trying to understand. What is the situation? I'm just saying, we just have to really take a look at the behavior of the children and his parents. I'm not saying that the young man should have been gunned down. I'm not saying that. So please don't listen to that. I'm not purporting that. But what I'm saying is we still must teach our children basic fundamental respect of authority. We cannot allow them to go out and act like heathens who does not love our kids like we love them when they treat them in a certain manner. We cannot demand, you know, that people just excuse their behavior.
Let me jump in.
The consequences to your actions.
Let me say this. So in other words, what you're trying to say is that we should raise our children and teach our children to kowtow to every individual that talks
right,
to them.
Right.
No, we're not.
No, no.
We're
what
supposed
I'm saying
to teach
is,
our children. Now, let me finish.
If you're walking in the middle of the street, get out the street.
Okay, let me finish. What I'm saying is
our children
should be taught
to
stand up for their rights.
I interject.
Okay, go ahead.
I have four sons. So my youngest right now just turned 15. So I understand the plight of everything that's going on in this American populace. But see, the thing is, when you teach your sons respect, as far as getting out of the street, there's nothing. There's nothing you can do when somebody has an agenda for you.
That's right. You have to teach your boys how to maintain the calmness,
which won't get would not that won't stop them from getting shot if somebody's gonna shoot.
That's right. I agree.
But the thing is, your sons have to know that there's this propensity for officers to be belligerent, to say the things, to try and get you off kilter, to try and get you angry.
I agree.
The thing is, even if you don't get angry, it don't mean you won't get shot.
Okay, and
that's true. All we can do is try and love our children and let them know exactly what's out there to prepare them for the worst and hope it's better than that.
Okay, and to the caller, I was not referring to Mike Brown as being a soldier. I was referring to the rest of us that's left behind. Mike Brown is going over, crossed over to somewhere else. But what I'm saying is we just left. We got to stand up like Ferguson stood up.
That's right.
And so what do we do? Are we going to just sit in place and wait till they come and get us and pick us off one by one? Or do we stand up like the people of Ferguson did and realize that we got a problem?
Well, we stand up, and while we're standing up, we also need to teach our children.
Well,
you know, and I agree with that, but here's the thing. Here's something we have to also keep in mind. There are consequences, true enough, for everything. And right, sometimes it's better to digress so that you can't live to fight another day. But with that being said, the authorities have to be held accountable for misconduct, just as equal that our children have to be held when they don't obey civil authority. Now, most police officers are taught that they have what's called absolute immunity, judicial immunity, and they have prosecutorial immunity. So since they have that, even when you get a clean-cut African-American male that obeys everything that that police officer is requesting, and that police officer still is involved in misconduct or wrongful arrest or police brutality, they are more than likely still going to get away with it. So while you're doing at home, you have to realize there's state federal statutes that says if the cop pulls me over tonight and I comply with everything he says, if he decides for whatever reason that he's going to beat me up or, look, God forbid, shoot me, the law is on his side, even though I
did
nothing wrong. So we have to also be willing to stand up and fight a capitalist, imperialistic police state so that when police officers, first of all, we got to work on getting that statute 8.2 changed. Because if you don't do that, even the best kid, it's not going to do them any good when they come up, like AG said, against that police officer who don't care and know that they can do anything because guess what? You're not hardly going to be able to sue them, and you're definitely not going to be able to do anything punitive against them. So we have to keep that in mind of what we're facing as a community.
Okay. Listen, y'all, I had to mute everybody because that echo was coming because I had so many phone lines open at the same time. So what I need you to do if you want to speak is just kind of push the one on and push the one off because if I have them all open at the same time, it gives that bad, bad echo that we just heard. Listen, if you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight. We're talking about the topic. Mike Brown's murder is the catalyst for what is going on in Ferguson right now. His murder is the catalyst for the unrest that we're seeing in Ferguson right now. And so tonight we're trying to get a better understanding. What do we need to do as a community? What do we need to do as a people? Because you know what? It's not just a black issue. It's not just a white issue. It's not just a man issue. It's not just a woman issue. They're picking at everybody. I mean, seriously, it's like we got cops that are on steroids time 100, and they're just, I mean, they're going out of roll call, and they're just in full attack mode. And the poor, unfortunate person that comes upon them, that's who gets the beat down, or that's who gets shot to death. And it's just right now, in my opinion, we can't even put a handle on it, because we can't say it's just happening in Fort Worth, which it is. We can't just say it's happening, you know, in other areas in L.A. or in Ferguson. It's happening in all of these departments, because we're seeing the videos on YouTube from all over. So I want to chime in and make one thing clear. I know, you know, what we saw today was a little confusing, because we watched as they told us allegedly who the officer was, which I think is suspect. I don't know if anybody else finds it suspect that it took them 6 days to tell us who he was. But immediately after they told us allegedly who the cop was that shot Mike Brown, then they immediately released the video showing that Michael Brown and his friend Dorian Johnson allegedly had just robbed a convenience store. My problem with all of that is, y'all, pay attention to propaganda. Pay attention to the fact that that was an absolute diversion technique that they used when they threw the video in right behind them releasing the name of the officer. Because if you pay attention to the second half of today, all of the attention went completely from, oh, we got the name of the officer, to, oh, they're showing us that Mike Brown had actually robbed the store. Well, the thing is, someone posted the video, and I don't know if anybody else is paying attention. The dates did not look correct on their initial video that they released, and then there was a second video allegedly that was released, and it showed a different time. So is the date stamp different on the first video that was released compared to the second video that was released? So there's a lot going on, and all I ask everybody to do, and I got so much traffic on my post for this event tonight, and it was so much, you know, back and forth with the racial slurs and all of that. That was very, very. If you have noise in your background, please mute yourself. But I was very disturbed at all the racial comments, and I found myself spending so much time deleting comments that I thought were distracting and mean-spirited and all of that. But at the same time, I think what I realized is, every single time, like I said earlier, it breaks down over racial lines, and it should not. Okay, somebody has noise in their background. If you would, please mute it. I'm not sure who that is. But what I see is we got to be smarter than that. I agree with Mark. There's an agenda here, and there's an agenda to take care of all of us, and I think it's called the New World Order, and I think if we don't know about it, we need to get familiar with it. Would anybody agree with that?
I do, Carrie.
Well, I would.
I agree with it.
This is Mark. Yes. Can I talk?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, I wasn't sure if I was still on the line or not, but I've been listening, and I want to tell you, I'm very impressed with you, and I'm very impressed with your audience, and I'm very impressed with your guest. You're some intelligent people, and I want you to know that there's a couple of terms I want to throw out to you. Divide and conquer, okay? Governments have used it throughout history. It's a way to maintain their control and their power over the masses, okay? And so that's very important for people to educate themselves about if they haven't already. And the other thing is that police brutality is real, and it crosses all racial and class lines. You know, it's not, I mean, as I've said before, you know, black people in America have been pushed down, oppressed more than any other minority in this country. But, you know, things are about to get real, you know, and white people need to wake up. they need to realize that it ain't about just black people. It's about the elites, the global elites, not just the elites in America, but the elites globally that want to establish a one-world government. And they want to create civil unrest here in America to justify martial law. So with that being said, I'm going to add one last thing and I'll shut up. And that is that once they establish martial law, what they're doing in Ferguson, for example, is they're saying, okay, Barack Obama and the federal government is the savior. They're going to come in and they're going to solve this problem. Well, watch out with what they do. Watch out with what they do. Okay? Because I want to tell you, the way they're going to solve the problem isn't going to be what you want.
Huh. Hello.
So I just want to say that this isn't about black and white. No, it's no longer about black and white. So white people need to wake up, especially. Okay.
In the case of Ferguson, it is about black and white. Now I understand what you're talking about, but anytime you have a police officer that say that they was blocking traffic, but he has the ability to drive about 150 feet from where these two individuals were crossing the street, throw his car in reverse, back up at a high rate of speed to where he almost run into. I asked, where is the traffic? And I know this street very well because we played baseball down in Ferguson, Forestwood Park. Then, when he's there with Mr. Brown, he reaches through the window and starts choking him and says, I will shoot you. Well, that's premeditated. He premeditated that.
Yeah, he pursued him.
There's no doubt about the fact that he premeditated it. There's no doubt in my mind that police officer executed that young man. I don't care if he robbed a store. I don't care what he did. The eyewitness testimony proves that that police officer executed that young man. So there's no doubt about that. But what we've got to do is we've got to widen our horizons. We've got to look beyond what the immediate situation is and see what the greater agenda is. And if we don't do that and unite as people, we're going to be doomed.
Well, I agree because I think the first example of anything occurring was Boston, during the Boston Marathon. It's when they tried to use the gear to see if all the military gear they had would work. Because I didn't know what was happening when I saw them getting these, look like a Humvees and these military vehicles, and they looked like they were the army, and that was just the police. And to me, that was the first example. But if we don't come together and manage this discussion and come up with a plan, America has a plan for everything. We have a plan for nothing.
Well, this community here is far off from having any thoughts about that. They're trying to put food on the table. Trying to be able to send their children to school. The problem with this community has turned from white to black, and whites continue to hold on to the jobs. As you already know, you only have 3 black police officers on the force who can't say nothing even though they see something's going on wrong. You have a vast majority of the fire department. You have a vast majority of whites on the public works, and you have a vast majority of whites in City Hall, dispatched, and so on. So that is one of the conversations that's going on, is that this has to change. Even the highway patrolman who's in charge of the operations there took it out of the police chief's there, Ferguson's hands, which they didn't like that. He said that this present situation is that whites who don't even live in the area are coming from miles around taking these jobs, and the blacks who grow up there, go to school, finish school, looking for opportunities, cannot get opportunities in their own communities, and they surely can't go to these outlying areas and be hired in those departments.
I agree. You know, the mayor said something on Twitter today, and I found it very, very interesting. They have a very interesting person, let's just say, as their mayor. In the height of all this going on in Ferguson, he found a need to, in my opinion, make his, how do I want to put this? I want to be politically correct. He seemed to make sure that he aligned himself with the police officers and the fact that he was letting them know that he appreciated them for the job that they did, which I found very interesting because you would think that if that was the only statement that he was going to make today, that maybe he wouldn't have made it in light of everything that's going on. And what he said, and this is Mayor Francis Slate is his name. He said, some of my Facebook friends are police officers or their families. A quick word for the officers of the many police departments who have been on the streets in Ferguson over the past several days. Thank you for your service, for honoring your oath, and for respecting your badge. I hope that the decisions made by the governor will make your mission clear and safer and shorter. End
well,
state.
The thing is, they did, this one officer did not honor his oath. He swore the oath to the United States Constitution, to the Constitution of the State of Missouri, and also to the ordinances and the laws in the city of Ferguson. He disrespected Mr. Brown's 14th Amendment right of due process. And, I mean, that is just it. And another point, Kerry, I want to mention. In all my life, I have never seen the media go against the police the way I've observed the media, national media, whether it's CNN or local media, is going against these police action. They're going against the militaristic action that we see with Humvees and military apparatuses, machine guns on tripods. They are totally against that. And they're speaking out against. I never have heard the media speak out against police actions the way I've heard on this particular case.
Well, maybe because of that the police, the Ferguson Police Department arrested two journalists for just trying to do their job. I understand they were in a McDonald's, and the Ferguson police went in there, roughed them up, and then arrested them basically for no reason other than they were doing their job. We understand, and I was watching the live feed on this the other night. Infowars.com was down there, and I think it was Ja'Kari Jackson and Joe Biggs were out with their cameras, and you could hear the police officers telling them, turn the cameras off. And they said, hey, are you talking to us? And they was like, yeah, turn your cameras off. And so that is, there's nowhere, you know, there's no law where there's a law that says you have to turn your camera off. You cannot record me, up here with pointing this gun at you. So I'm trying to figure out what went wrong with what was going on in Ferguson. Is it because this is the kind of nonsense? Somebody's got noise in their background. Is this the kind of nonsense that Ferguson had been operating in all these years, and they just got caught red-handed? So, you know, Mike Brown's death, you know, just basically pulled the covers off of what has been going on in Ferguson for way too long, maybe intimidating the people down there. If somebody's on the phone line that's from Ferguson or the area around Ferguson, you know, raise your hand tonight and tell me what's going on in Ferguson, because we still want to know what's going on the ground down there. We want to know, you know, if you were part of the riots, if you were part of the rallies, if you were part of the protests. We want to know what the feeling was like being in the crowd. What happened, the nights that we've seen these live feeds when you're out there and they're throwing tear gas at you and they're throwing plastic bullets at you, or shooting plastic bullets at you, rather. You know, what was that like? If anybody is on the phone line that was or is listening live, I want you to call in. The number is 347-850-8390. If you are in this listening audience anywhere and you are a part of those riots in any way, I want you to please get on the phone line before the end of the show and tell us what you experienced down there in Ferguson, because I've got a friend that's in St. Louis now about to hit the ground in Ferguson. You know, I myself am not the type of person that runs into a fire. I'd rather report on the fire than run into a fire. But I know there always has to be soldiers on the front line to come back and report to the rest of us. But if you have been a soldier that's been out there, you know, in the trenches, basically trying to bring justice to the death of Mike Brown, we want to hear about it. I mean, we really do. Get on the phone line at 347-850-8390 is the number to call. You know, there's so much going on in Ferguson. One thing that I heard today as I was listening to a CNN interview was they said that there is a smear campaign now underway to assassinate the character of Mike Brown. And the term the young man used on CNN, and I'm sorry, I'm stealing his quote, and I did not get his name, but I'm going to give him credit. He was being interviewed on CNN tonight. But what he said was that this was the 3D playbook. And basically, he said that was to deny, discredit, and destroy the character of Mike Brown. Do y'all agree that's what they did today? All of a sudden they came out with all guns blazing today, and they were in full effect trying to assassinate the young man's character.
But they did it with Trayvon. They did it with everybody. You know what I'm saying? I said this earlier. In the history of America, every black man that they wanted to look guilty, they assassinated his name and character first.
And also, that's true. And in this particular case, it was said that Brown didn't have a criminal record. Can you imagine the implications? Because they love for black men to have some, even if 20 years ago, because they will bring that up to basically vilify and try and discredit the character and the name, just like AJ is saying. And in this case, because he didn't, they had to have a link, because now, without that, you just basically have an African-American male who is not a career criminal, never been in trouble, and they cannot have that, because then the only thing that they can do is fabricate stuff. So they use this other incident that didn't have anything to do with the police officer that he first made contact with. So it is true. They villainize, and they're going to do that, because if the case ever goes to trial, that's what they're going to throw up there as the glaring smoking gun, is that, hey, well, he had just previously robbed the convenience store, and, you know, he was a threat and so forth and so forth. But it's already been in not really in a deposition, but that the police officers admitted that he was not even aware that that had even happened previously.
Exactly. And let me ask you something. Anybody thought, why have they not arrested Dorian Jackson yet? I mean, Johnson. His name was Dorian Johnson, the young man that was with Mike Brown. If they stole these cigarettes, and y'all, I'm going to be honest with you. I saw Dorian just before I went live tonight, and somebody sounds like they've gotten to that young man. I heard that young man basically pointing a finger at Mike Brown tonight. I mean, and basically what he said was, listen, we was in the store, and Mike Brown reached back there and got those cigarettes, and he put them in a bag and he handed them to me, and I told Mike, hey, I don't steal. Well, listen, I didn't hear that on the first tape. I'm sorry. I didn't hear him say nothing about no cigarette or no store at all on the first tape. All I heard him talk about was what happened when they were in the street. Today, I'm hearing him say what?
That's a good voiceover for video.
Oh, you don't think that was him?
I think it was him, but I think it was a voiceover.
Okay.
You can edit anything.
Okay. Let's just be clear. Do you believe he said that? Do you believe somebody's gotten to him? Or do you believe that was just someone pretending to be him? I don't know what you're saying.
I believe somebody got to him. Just like when Jesse left after they figured that, they said if you didn't have something that you died for, there's no reason to live. And after Martin was killed, Jesse went to Operation Push. Abernathy went back to the church. And Andrew Young went to be a governor or whatever. Everybody just vacated their national presence and became these local leaders. Because the biggest fear is when what you say is what you mean.
Okay. We're going to go to NACO 817-893. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Good evening, Carrie. This is Darnell Ballard. I just wanted to call to let you know I'm enjoying the program. My mother, she's listening to the show. And I just want to say, you guys, everything you guys are saying is so true. Everything you guys are saying is so true. And I do agree that our young people do have to take responsibility, but at the same time, these police departments definitely have to take responsibility, and they should be trained. One thing that you said earlier tonight that I heard you say is that these not only the young people but the police department, if you're not capability of working with kids, you shouldn't be working with kids. You should not be working with young people, because you know how people are gonna be. So it's a responsibility of the police department, and I have seen how the Fort Worth Police Department taught crazy to people, and I don't have it happen to me a whole bunch of times where they talk crazy and follow me around, and I haven't done nothing. So racial profiling is really bad with the African American, especially a black man in this country. We are a threat as not only black men but black people. Period. We are a threat. And so when people don't know what be going on, you know, you can just go by where I should say, but it really be happening on these streets where these police officers will take advantage. They take advantage of their power, and they will kill you. We can sit up here all day and say, you know, we need to do the right thing. But even if we are doing the right thing, you're taking a chance of getting killed. Because if the police want to come out to you, they're going to come out to you. Now, believe me, I've seen it happen. They arrest me all the time. I get arrested. I get followed. I was in Super Tiger 1, and I got followed. So I know how these white police officers be. They feel that everybody is in the wrong. They feel that if you black, you're not right.
You know,
and this is true.
You know, he made a good point, though. It does seem like a different mood is out there with the officers now. You know, it used to be a time when you came upon an officer, you felt like he was doing his job, so you respected him, and he respected you. And mm-hmm. If he pulled you over and he asked you for your identification, you would address him yes sir or yes ma'am or no ma'am or yes sir or no sir, because it was respect there. You respected the authority even if you didn't like the person. There's been a total breakdown recently where nobody seems to trust the police. People don't want to encounter the police. People all automatically become suspicious if they are encountered by the police that they're going to be harmed or they're going to die. To me, at that point, your job, you're not being effective in your job. If no one wants to see you coming, if people rather resolve a crime situation themselves than call you for fear that it may turn deadly, where are we at? What are we paying you? What are we paying you for? These people are wage earners, and we're acting as though these people are God. I mean, or they're the law. No, they're there to enforce the law. And I think, and y'all, I know they're going to get me for this, but you know what? I just can't live in that kind of fear no more. First of all, fear is not of God. And second of all, if every officer is doing his job, he shouldn't mind us having a conversation about those that aren't. And I'll say a thing, too. One thing we as a people got to realize, they got a code among them. When one of them die, they come from every state to be a part of the funeral services. If one of them gets in trouble, the other one covers up for them. Why is it out there on the street we're leaving everybody like Eric Garner to die at the hands of police? Why aren't people speaking up and saying, hey, y'all are killing that man? Why didn't people speak up and say, why don't y'all call the ambulance? That man is down there dying. Why didn't people do that? We do not respect and treat each other like they're cold blue or whatever you call that little honor system they have amongst each other. We don't have that for each other. Something's
You're
wrong,
right.
Y'all. But we're gonna go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 404-663. Good evening. You're on center stage. I think 404-668. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Gary?
Yeah.
Hey. This is Rich Lou. How are you?
Fine, Rich Lou. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great show. It's very informative. I think what you're talking about right now was very on the top of my mind when I watched the interviews and the press conferences. At this point, I think the chief of police there in Ferguson is no longer fit to hold that position. He stood there in that press conference, and he initially mentioned that he did not know whether that policeman knew of the alleged robbery before he engaged Mike Brown. As that press conference continued, he continued to try to walk around it and talk about it subtly, and then once pushed up against the wall and was forced with a direct question, he said that he did indeed know that police officer did not know that Mike Brown was allegedly involved in the robbery at the store. So the fact of the matter is the chief of police stood before the world and perpetrated a cover-up. He lied. He stood there in front of the press, and he didn't misspeak. He lied. And at that point, he created this situation that you're talking about that permeates right now, this us against them, the cops against everybody else. He showed his hand. that it is indeed them against us, and he showed that he was a part of that cover-up. He walked in front of that camera unprepared. You saw him from the start stuttering and scratching his head and making all these signs of a very nervous person who has more to say or more to hide than he's allowed to say, and it just feeds the frenzy of people saying that this is not just a case of a cop overstepping his bounds or an excessive use of force. This is not just an illegal act. This is a cover-up. So it's historically, what you see in situations is not the act that causes all the confusion, that causes all the criminal activity, that causes all the pain in the community. It's the cover-up. So when people come out initially and you find out something went wrong, that's fine. We can handle that. Cop kills a kid. We see it more than we should, but we see it a lot. And if the police come right out and say, hey, there's a lot of questions around this. We don't know really what happened. There are allegations everywhere, and we're trying to figure this out. I think black people are not crazy. We just don't see these instances and flip out. It is the injustice. So Trayvon Martin had been dead a week before you started seeing the marches. And that's because there was a cover-up, and there's this unwillingness to speak to the community and saying there's a problem. That's what infuriates us, and that's what this chief of police is keeping alive today.
I agree. I agree 100% with everything you just said. And you know what? I did not get a chance to see his interview, but I saw the, I don't know if it was a, the Ferguson Police Department, but there was an initial report that came out of the police department early on. And I think I'm very suspect of the officer saying he sustained injuries and that type of thing. And all of a sudden, days later, his face is swollen. And, you know, all of this is just suspect. And, you know, it is just, I don't know why they would want to make people not trust them even more than they already do. But, you know, it's just a lot going on down there in Ferguson, and I think they keep forgetting the world is watching. Not just Ferguson, the entire world is watching this situation right now. And honest to God, it's not going away because they have pulled the scab off of a wound that never healed. It didn't heal from the 60s, and it's just really right now, it's just gushing. I mean, it's absolutely gushing. We're going to go to the back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 313-454. Good evening. You're on center stage. 313-454.
Hello.
Good evening. Hi.
How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to tell a story about the police. This is not just in Ferguson. This is everywhere, even in Detroit. I lost my father to the hands of Detroit police, the state police. He was in a confrontation with his girlfriend at home. You know, he was blind in one eye. The girl hit him in the head with the walking stick. So, therefore, he had a black eye on one side. The police came, took her to the hospital, took him to the hospital. They checked him out. But I guess apparently wasn't nothing really wrong where they can keep him in the hospital. So this was on a Friday. Come Monday, he was dead in police custody. And then I got the autopsy report. He had broken ribs. It was a lunar mark shape on his ribs. Like, so he died from internal bleeding while he was in the police cell. They found him unresponsive in the cell. Then they want to rush and try and take him to the hospital. So I believe they took him to the hospital first. They're real cunning. They took him to the hospital first. Then on the way to the jail, that's when he got his ass whooped by the police. So they get away with it. I got an attorney. It was telling me I had to prove that the police did it. I couldn't prove, but I know when I go over the whole story, the police did it. But I couldn't get nobody to represent me and my family, you know, a family to represent my father. So the police, they do stick together.
They do stick together. That's unfortunate because, you know, you would think that they're here to protect and serve, and you would think that a bad officer, a good officer wouldn't want to ride with a bad officer. You know, I mean, but why is it that the good officers don't weed the bad officers out? What's that? You know, and the young lady brought up a very good point about the medical issues. I want to bring up the fact.
Yes, because you know
Why did Michael Brown
why didn't they call EMTs for Michael Brown?
Thanks.
Anybody?
Did they find the relos when the guy shot him up on the ground? Did they find the relos?
Exactly.
I seen his red hat. Where's the red hat? Was that really him? Was that that day? Was that whatever? Why not just, if he feel like he stole something or whatever, well, they got the story all twisted up on TV. But anyway, if he did suspect that he stole something, take him to the police station. Put the handcuffs on him and find out what's really going on. Don't just kill the boy.
Well, no. The cigarettes weren't even an issue. The police chief admitted today that the officer that stopped them for walking in the street didn't even know that they had been a part of this alleged robbery. So we can take that completely out of the equation. So that's saying allegedly he killed a man just for walking in the street.
In the middle of the street, right.
Murderer? Yeah.
Oh, then it's like, my son walking in the street in Jackson, Michigan. Police pull him over tonight, like 1 o'clock in the morning, tell him, get out of the street. And I'm just saying, God, that he got out the street and went on about his business. What would have happened? Everybody sleep. Ain't no witnesses hardly out there. You know, they a trip. I know there's some good ones out there, but there's some bad ones.
But, Carrie, I have a different question I want to throw in.
Okay.
See, the American government is superseding on all the other countries that are warring, trying to create a ceasefire. But there's no ceasefire in America. So how can you go abroad to stop that unnecessary killing and let the unnecessary killing continue in your own front yard?
Mm-hmm. It's too many. And you know what? To be honest with you, there's some war zones out there in terms of there's a lot of killings in Chicago and there's a lot of killings in Memphis. But at the same time, I think most people kind of look at today we're in more fear of being killed by the police than we are in fear of being killed by each other.
But that's what I'm saying, a ceasefire altogether, because there has to be an intervention between all of it. Because definitely every police chief needs to be accountable for his soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
And when they're not, there has to be some recourse. Because I think you start removing these people from these jobs and they start getting fired, like all the blacks that were last hired, getting fired and no job, then they're going to see how hard it is to support your family with no income. And everybody's going to have to start doing the right thing.
And I think we got to start demanding that the police force be some people that we can respect. I mean, seriously, some people that we're not intimidated by. We shouldn't be walking by the police and be intimidated by the police. I'm a law-abiding citizen. Why would I be afraid to see the police coming? That's crazy. I've never committed a crime in my life. I've never been arrested in my life. Okay, somebody's got some noise in their background. I've never committed a crime in my life. I've never been arrested in my life. But why is it I don't want to see the police coming? Why is it most of my friends don't want to see the police coming? Because you know what? We sense that based on everything we're seeing, that no matter what they may stop you for, it could turn deadly. I mean, if you can stop a man in the middle of the street for walking in the street, he comes up dead 5 minutes later, what in the world? I mean, the rest of us that are watching this from the outside going, but how did he get killed? What was the struggle about? Why did he pick him up off the ground in a chokehold while he was still in the vehicle? Why did he shoot the gun while he was still in the vehicle? It just so much ain't making sense. You know, we know that the police departments up there have already collected the video cameras and this, that, the other, but I would say to anybody who's got video footage, tell them I said it. You better make a copy of your videos and information before you release it to anybody. I mean, that's just me. Would y'all agree with that? It's crazy to release your information before you've copied it. I mean, I can't see having something that shows that somebody murdered somebody and I just give it to somebody. Why would I do that? First of all, how did they know I had it? And why would I just give it away? That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I don't know what the situation was when the police came and asked everybody for their information, but I can't imagine the police knew exactly who had footage and who didn't. And why would you volunteer it before you copied it? I don't know. I mean, just something very strange about all of this. But back to the fact, Mike Brown never got any medical attention.
When did police officers start pronouncing people dead at the scene? I didn't know that job crossed into that area. I thought that you had to be pronounced dead by a medical examiner or EMT or something like that. Why is it that he never received any medical attention whatsoever?
As long as there's one story, I said, as long as there's one story, that's the only story you hear. And that's what it's always been. I'm saying if there is an altercation, the one story that you hear can't be refuted by another person if they're dead, if they're not here.
Well, his shooting took place in front of an apartment complex with obviously a lot of eyewitnesses from what we were seeing. And so if that is the case, why in the world, I mean, how can we not say whether or not there was a medical attention brought to him or not? But what I'm understanding, the people of Ferguson are saying that there was no EMTs even let through. The police blocked the EMTs and never even let them get to him. And then
Exactly. I'm saying that if they let him through late, then he's dead on the scene. And I'm saying I'm trying to think. I think they say like 85% of eyewitnesses didn't see what they said they saw.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So if there's only one story, all you got to do is refute the eyewitnesses. Your word in blue matters more than anybody else in the crowd.
Well, the video is different than your eyewitness account with your eyes, right? So if there are people who actually got video of the officer shooting him, can that be disputed as well? I guess they could say it was audited. What did they call it?
They say it doesn't show the whole story.
Okay.
Then they add the other parts of the story.
Yeah, it doesn't show why he shot him.
Yeah, it doesn't show the whole story. So. But there's always an ability to refute when you have two people. then you kind of get two parts of the story, you can put it together. But when there's just one, you can refute other information no matter where it came from, video evidence. You know, because I think there was a joke on some song saying, if you saw me on the video twice or three times, that wasn't me.
Okay. Right. And I think we're living in a time when that's exactly what happens. Every time somebody produces some video footage, unless it's a dash cam video, then maybe somebody edited it. That's the term I'm using. Somebody someone edited it, and it wasn't exactly the full video or something, that type of thing. But listen, y'all, I want to know who felt like Anonymous was the star of the show this week. Listen. Much love to Anonymous from Center Stage tonight. Anonymous actually helped Center Stage pull off a Twitter blast today from 12 to 1 p.m. Central, and I thank them so much. But Anonymous has also helped the people of Ferguson a whole lot. They hacked into the computer system of the Ferguson Police Department. They have demanded that the Ferguson Police Department treat those people right down there, or they're going to wreak havoc on them. Is anybody else kind of like in awe of just how bad Anonymous is?
Not at all. Not at all.
I mean, you know what? And this is the crazy part. When in history has the underdog, such as a community like Ferguson, had somebody come to their aid and help them out like that?
Well, America, when they were trying to succeed from the British.
I think I don't know who made the point earlier about the fact, I don't know if that was Christopher or somebody else, how the media has turned on them. It may have been Donald that made that comment or somebody, how the media has turned on. Somebody's phone line has got some noise in it. But how the media realizes that ain't right, what's going on down there. How, you know, super savvy hacker like the Anonymous group has realized what's going on down there, right? The whole world pretty much knows what's going on in Ferguson isn't right. But has anybody besides me got the feeling like this feels like Katrina all over again? Does anybody feel that? Remember Katrina, how helpless you felt? Okay, somebody's got some noise in their background. You remember after Katrina how we felt so helpless that our people were going through the struggle and we couldn't help them, you know? And I feel the same way with the situation that's going on in Ferguson. It's like
those people look like me, but they're treating them like they're animals and sticking dogs on them or attempting or threatening to stick dogs on them. When did we get that far off course?
Well, the next step is they're going to call them refugees.
Oh, this is true. Why did Ferguson, let me ask you this now, and I alluded to this earlier, why did Ferguson do all the looting and tear up all the stores in their own community? Why did they do that? That's what happened with Rodney King and Watts situation. Why did they do that? Anybody?
That happened in Detroit. I think that's the only place they know. And everybody, you know, because I think we are so reactionary that once somebody starts something, everybody goes in.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they wanted to. It was just a follow-through motion or movement. And, mm-hmm. and I think, that's what I'm saying, I think we go through things being reactionary with no plan. And that's what I'm saying. At this particular juncture, with these things happening all over America, we need a plan. And I think the first plan is to find out how to annex and get the information on how many police are in the annexes in your community, what police will transfer from where. And you start doing this location and doing this information. See, just the gathering of information frightens people when you start looking like you know something.
Well, you know what, too? I think we got to demand that they stop, like you said, moving these officers around, shuffling them like they're, you know, pawns on some chess game or something. What we got to demand is bad apples got to go. You know, when they start killing people,
exactly.
or their behavior, you know, indicates that there's something wrong, whether that's mental or something else, steroids or drug use. I think we got to do something else because we're putting the people in jeopardy trying to save mm-hmm. somebody who really shouldn't be saved. I mean, that's just
Carrie,
my opinion.
Carrie, can you hear me?
Yeah,
that goes back to the fact that, like I was saying before, that when they first go into the academy, if they would stop and look at these people's backgrounds, whether they came out the military, whether they were a problem child in school, whether they had mental issues in their families that are hereditary, once they start looking at those things and start evaluating them on those things and double check, I mean, don't go by, okay, well, they got the college qualifications to be an officer or they just came out the military as an MP. That does not qualify you to serve and protect people. What type of child were you? Were you a bully? Were you a miscreant when you were growing up? I mean, they need to look at those things. Nowadays, even officers that have, like, a minor weed or arrest, they can still become officers, okay? And the thing about it is everybody's talking about what do we need to do. What I taught my nephews were if you got pulled over by the police, you say nothing other than call my uncle, call my auntie, call my grandmother, and you don't say nothing else until we get there. And meanwhile, mm-hmm. you have a cell phone. You put that voice recorder on your cell phone where you can access it quickly, and you press that button and put it in your pocket, put it on in your shirt, hold it in your hand, and you have a right to record them. Just like they record us, we have a right to record them, and there's nothing that they can do about it. That's how we protect ourselves.
I don't know, because if you get your phone, they may think you got a gun or getting a
knife. No, I mean, you can hold it in your hand and just press the recorder to record. There's nothing against the law. They published something, and I put it on my Facebook page, where you have the right as a citizen to record them. You have a right as a citizen to videotape them. If you feel they're doing something wrong, you have every right to do that. You have a right not to tell them what your name is.
Well, you know, what citizens should start asking is that the police officer wear the breast cameras so that any contact they have with anyone is being recorded.
Exactly.
And it's not, that's because in cases where that is already going on, incidents of police harassment, police brutality, and like we're talking about here, have curtailed tremendously.
I'm not telling kids to be disrespectful. I'm not telling them to talk crazy to them. I'm telling these kids that I see on the streets that I just idly may pull up in a convenience store and see them standing out, and I give them this information, and I tell them, you know, you have this right. to walk up and down these streets just like anybody else. You don't have to be doing anything for these police officers who pull you over nowadays. I was pulled over, and I wasn't doing anything. And, you know, like I told the guy, I have a right, you know, to be on this street. But where do you live? I live in Fort Worth. It makes no difference where I live.
Mm-hmm.
I have a right to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. People want, I mean, I got off the phone earlier because when you have somebody saying that we need to kowtow to their behavior, no, that's the problem. We're hiding because of their behavior when we need to be speaking out about their injustice so that the public is aware and that your neighbor is aware. We need to start, like everybody's saying, we need to start speaking up, fighting back, and get our lives back because we, like I said before, we are still in Jim Crow. I don't care how you look at the pictures on the video with the dogs and the firehouses and the smoke bombs. The same thing happened to those people back then that fought for our rights. And if we sit here and say nothing, then we're doing them an injustice for all the death that were lost during that period. And I don't feel that's right. We have every right to be a citizen in our city and feel safe. And we're not fighting the Bloods and the Crips. We're fighting the police. And that's
true. And you know what? Somebody brought up a point, and I want to jump piggyback on that. I think that they need to randomly drug test police officers. I think they need to randomly psyche eval police officers. I think, you know what? The one thing that came out of Ferguson when they made that a first official statement about what was going on, they did say we've taken him off the force. And we got him on, what is it, administrative leave. And before he comes back to duty, we're going to make sure that he gets a psyche valve. That says to me, maybe they realize this joker may not be, like, all there. And so
okay.
I think there's some other officers that probably have exhibited some behavior that says they're not all together there. And I think
that's
police force. Huh?
That's a problem. You're putting them on administrative leave with pay. So regardless of whether or not they come back onto the police force, they haven't lost anything. They haven't lost their rank. They haven't lost their paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And their behavior is still the same. Yes, any idiot can go in and say, well, no, I don't have this problem. I mean, everybody knows how to work the system one way or the other when it comes to talking to a psychiatrist. They've been trained on what to say, what not to say. But it boils down to the people that are in power, that are running these cities, that are sitting back idly letting this happen over and over again, and they're turning a blind eye. Now, once you start targeting those people and making them do their job, which we voted them into office in the first place, because I tell them in a heartbeat, I voted you in. I can vote you out. And when you start threatening their livelihoods like that, so then they realize, okay, I need to get up and start doing something. I need to start paying attention to my constituents that put me in this office in the first place. Because until people start threatening those jobs, I mean, like Perry is being indicted now, but he's still being able to run the governor's office. No, when you're indicted, you need to move out that office, out that house, and go back to your regular home without pay until they figure out whether or not you're innocent or guilty.
You know what? I think all the above. I think when someone mentioned earlier about they should wear their, I think it was Pianki said they should wear those breastplate cameras. I think that too, and they also should, every time they do a stop, those dash cam videos should be activated. I think enough of the dash cam wasn't on. You know what? If you kill somebody and your dash cam wasn't on, that would automatically tell us there's a problem.
Okay, Karen,
because
that should be
part of your job. I'm sorry?
I'm going to tell you what the problem is with that. When Jermaine was killed, the officer that tased him had his helmet cam on, and he kept turning it off and on. So
no.
You never saw what he did.
No.
So, therefore, you know, they control those. They can say, oh, well, it was malfunctioning, or it wasn't working properly. And then when those tapes get to them, they have ways of altering those tapes that you don't see what actually happened.
Okay, Yonker. I didn't know that. That's good information to know. So if you see your officer messing with his camera, make sure you make a notation. When he was in the middle of whatever he was doing to me or somebody who witnessed it, we kept seeing him mess with the camera. We need to make notations of stuff like that. We got to learn how when we come on a situation dealing with the police, we got to be able to get who, what, when, where, and how. How tall was he? What did he look like? What was he wearing? What did he say to me? When did he say it? What day was it? We got to start programming ourselves to be able to record a police report because we're going to have to start giving up. Because we're going to have to start giving up on the officers that are not doing us right. So
Make sure you get his vehicle number. Get the license plate off his vehicle number. He can't deny not driving it because he checked it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the things that you need to be aware of, especially if you go videotape them. You need to make sure, or just take a quick picture of that vehicle. Zoom in on that number on the side of that car. Zoom in on that officer and whoever his partner may or may not be. You get all that information, and you store it up in the cloud. It can't be erased from up there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are ways that you have to go about doing it, but the most important thing is start being a community, band together, and start speaking out. Go to your city council meetings. I went to them, and yes, they called me up at 11 o'clock at night when everybody was gone, but I still stood my ground and said what we had to say. Even though it fell on deaf ears, somebody that was watching it on TV heard this.
Mm-hmm. And listen, y'all, I want to put it out there, and we're going to go to 773-501. I don't know if that's Christopher or someone else calling from a Chicago number, but I want to put it out there. When you go to your city council, especially Fort Worth, you know what? If you're talking about the police or you're talking about something that they did wrong, they're going to put you on the back of the agenda. So they're going to put you out there when everybody's listening at the beginning or in the middle. They make sure that they put you on the back of the agenda. So
you will be the last one to speak.
If they move you way back, that means they're trying to make sure everybody else has gotten up, said what they're going to say, and they're gone so that nobody hears what you're saying. That's how they play the game, y'all.
Yeah, and you got to play that game with them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You have to find somebody that works in your local newspaper that wants the story.
Mm-hmm.
You make this story so compelling that they have no choice but to say, okay, well, I need to investigate this. You call your local newspaper. They may not hear you at the beginning, but eventually if you make enough noise, they're going to hear you. But, I mean, just like they were talking about when I said mentioned The Purge, okay, they didn't put that movie out there as a mistake. They put that movie out there to let us know this is what we are doing. And you can take it how you want it, but this is exactly how we're doing it. And like you said, it has everything to do with the underground Illuminati. Yeah. I mean, all of things tie hand in hand. And until we stop being naive to ourselves and saying that it's our kids, it's not our kids. It's our government that is doing these things because they are the powers that will. We gave them the power to be at will, first off, because half of them didn't do their homework before they hired these people. You need to get on your computer. Investigate where they went to school, where they went to high school. You can investigate these people before you vote them in the office. You don't put somebody in there.
We're going to get one more call before we get out of here. 972-989. Good evening. You're on center stage. 972-989. Last call, 972-989.
Hello?
Okay. Obviously, that person came on. Okay, listen, y'all. If you want to say something before we close out the show tonight, you need to get on the phone lines now, 347-850-8390. The number to call is 347-850-8390. It's been a very informative show. Listen, this is what I think we got to do, y'all. I think there's only one way we're going to fix this problem. I think there's so much wrong, so much broken. I think so many people are hurting, but they're afraid, and they don't know what to do. And I think until we come together and do dialogues like this about problems that are going on, I think that's the only way in exchanging information that we can fix it and find some common denominators to how to fix our problem. Listen, this is what we do each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a church member to check out Center Stage every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Listen, if you'd like to drop us a line and tell us what you think of the show, or if you have a show idea, drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. That's centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next week, same time. Yes.
Kara, before I go, my only thing I want to leave with the listeners is the only fear, the only thing that you should fear is God. And as long as you have him on your side, we can make these changes. We have to stop being afraid of those that are walking among us and start fearing the one that put us here in the first place. And and the answers will come to us. If we start banding together as a unit, as a united front, we can change the Tea Party. If we band together strong enough, that can be changed as well. But we have to be willing to stand up and speak out. My prayers go out to the family of the young man because I understand personally what they're going through.
And Center Stage did not say that at the opening, but we too like to say, first of all, rest in peace to Michael Brown and to his family. You're in our prayers. You have our condolences. And we're doing everything we can here at Center Stage to help you all find justice for Mike. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Love you much. Bye.